I can't believe that this is possible, I exclaimed. Don Juan took my statement literally and scolded me. He said he was tired of my acting as an ultimately important being that has to be given proof over and over that the world is unknown and marvelous. I tried to explain that a rhetorical exclamation had no significance. He retorted that if that were so, I could have chosen another statement. It seemed that he was seriously annoyed with me. I sat up halfway and began to apologize, but he laughed, and, imitating my manner of speaking, suggested a series of hilarious rhetorical exclamations I could have used instead. I ended up laughing at the calculated absurdity of some of his proposed alternatives. He giggled, and in a soft tone reminded me that I should abandon myself to the sensation of floating. The soothing feeling of peace and plenitude that I experienced in that mysterious place aroused some deeply buried emotions in me. I began to talk about my life. I confessed that I had never respected or liked anybody, not even myself, and that I had always felt I was inherently evil, and thus my attitude towards others was always veiled with a certain bravado and daring. True, Don Juan said. You don't like yourself at all. He cackled and told me that he had been seeing while I talked. His recommendation was that I shouldn't have remorse for anything I'd done, because to isolate one's acts as being mean or ugly or evil was to place an unwarranted importance on the self. I moved nervously, and the bed of leaves made a rustling sound. Don Juan said that if I wanted to rest, I shouldn't make my leaves feel agitated, and that I should imitate him and lie without making a single movement. He added that in his seeing, he had come across one of my moods. He struggled for a moment, seemingly to find a proper word, and said that the mood in question was a frame of mind I continually lapsed into. He described it as a sort of trap door that opened at unexpected times and swallowed me. I asked him to be more specific. He replied that it was impossible to be specific about seeing. Before I could say anything else, he told me I should relax, but not fall asleep, and be in a state of awareness for as long as I could. He said that the bed of strings was made exclusively to allow a warrior to arrive at a certain state of peace and well-being. In a dramatic tone, Don Juan stated that well-being was a condition one had to groom, a condition one had to become acquainted with in order to seek it. You don't know what well-being is, because you've never experienced it, he said. I disagreed with him, but he continued arguing that well-being was an achievement one had to deliberately seek. He said that the only thing I knew how to seek was a sense of disorientation, ill-being, and confusion. He laughed mockingly and assured me that in order to accomplish the feat of making myself miserable, I had to work in a most intense fashion, and that it was absurd. I had never realized I could work just the same in making myself complete and strong. The trick is in what one emphasizes, he said. We either make ourselves miserable, or we make ourselves strong. The amount of work is the same. I closed my eyes and relaxed again, and began to feel I was floating. For a short while, it was as if I were actually moving through space like a leaf. Although it was utterly pleasurable, the feeling somehow reminded me of times when I'd become sick and dizzy, and would experience a sensation of spinning. I thought perhaps I'd eaten something bad. I heard Don Juan talking to me, but I didn't really make an effort to listen. I was trying to make a mental inventory of all the things I'd eaten that day, but I couldn't become interested in it. It didn't seem to matter. Watch the way the sunlight changes, he said. His voice was clear. I thought it was like water, fluid and warm. The sky was totally free of clouds towards the west, and the sunlight was spectacular. Perhaps the fact that Don Juan was cueing me made the yellowish glow of the afternoon sun truly magnificent. "Let that glow kindle you," Don Juan said. "Before the sun goes down today, you must be perfectly calm and restored, because tomorrow, or the day after, you're going to learn not doing." "Learn not doing what?" I asked.
"Never mind now," he said.
"Wait until we're in those lava mountains." He pointed to some distant, jagged, dark, menacing-looking peaks towards the north. Thursday, April 12, 1962. We reached the high desert around the lava mountains in the late afternoon. In the distance, the dark brown lava mountains looked almost sinister. The sun was very low on the horizon and shone on the western face of the solidified lava, tinting its dark brownness with a dazzling array of yellow reflections. I couldn't keep my eyes away. Those peaks were truly mesmerizing. By the end of the day, the bottom slopes of the mountains were in sight. There was very little vegetation on the high desert. All I could see were cacti and a kind of tall grass that grew in tufts. Don Juan stopped to rest. He sat down, carefully propped his food gourds against a rock, and said that we were going to camp on that spot for the night. He'd picked a relatively high place. From where I stood, I could see quite a distance away, all around us. It was a cloudy day, and the twilight quickly enveloped the area. I became involved in watching the speed with which the crimson clouds on the west faded into a uniform, thick, dark gray. Don Juan got up and went to the bushes. By the time he came back, the silhouette of the lava mountains was a dark mass. He sat down next to me and called my attention to what seemed to be a natural formation on the mountains towards the northeast. It was a spot that had a color much lighter than its surroundings. While the whole range of lava mountains looked uniformly dark brown in the twilight, the spot he was pointing at was actually yellowish, or dark beige. I couldn't figure out what it could be. I stared at it for a long time. It seemed to be moving. I fancied it to be pulsating. When I squinted my eyes, it actually rippled, as if the wind were moving it. "Look at it fixedly," Don Juan commanded me. At one moment, after I'd maintained my stare for quite a while, I felt that the whole range of mountains was moving towards me. That feeling was accompanied by an unusual agitation in the pit of my stomach. The discomfort became so acute that I stood up.
"Sit down,"
Don Juan yelled, but I was already on my feet. From my new point of view, the yellowish formation was lower on the side of the mountains. I sat down again, without taking my eyes away, and the formation shifted to a higher place. I stared at it for an instant, and suddenly I arranged everything into the correct perspective. I realized that what I had been looking at was not in the mountains at all, but was really a piece of yellowish-green cloth hanging from a tall cactus in front of me. I laughed out loud and explained to Don Juan that the twilight had helped to create an optical illusion. He got up and walked to the place where the piece of cloth was hanging, took it down, folded it, and put it inside his pouch.
"What are you doing that for?" I asked.
"Because this piece of cloth has power," he said casually. "For a moment you were doing fine with it, and there's no way of knowing what may have happened if you'd remain seated." Friday, April 13th, 1962. At the crack of dawn, we headed for the mountains. They were surprisingly far away. By midday, we walked into one of the canyons. There was some water in shallow pools. We sat to rest in the shade of a hanging cliff. The mountains were clumps of a monumental lava flow. The solidified lava had weathered over the millennia into a porous, dark brown rock. Only a few sturdy weeds grew between the rocks and in the cracks. Looking up at the almost perpendicular walls of the canyon, I had a weird sensation in the pit of my stomach. The walls were hundreds of feet high and gave me the feeling that they were closing in on me. The sun was almost overhead, slightly towards the southwest. "Stand up here," Don Juan said, and maneuvered my body until I was looking towards the sun. He told me to look fixedly at the mountain walls above me. The sight was stupendous. The magnificent height of the lava flow staggered my imagination. I began to wonder what a volcanic upheaval it must have been. I looked up and down the sides of the canyon various times. I became immersed in the richness of color in the rock wall. There were specks of every conceivable hue. There were patches of light grain moss or lichen in every rock. I looked right above my head and noticed that the sunlight was producing the most exquisite reflections when it hit the brilliant specks of the solidified lava. I stared at an area in the mountains where the sunlight was being reflected. As the sun moved, the intensity diminished, then it faded completely. I looked across the canyon and saw another area of the same exquisite light refractions. I told Don Juan what was happening, and then I spotted another area of light, and then another in a different place, and another, until the whole canyon was blotched with big patches of light. I felt dizzy. Even if I closed my eyes, I could still see the brilliant lights. I held my head in my hands and tried to crawl under the hanging cliff. But Don Juan grabbed my arm firmly and imperatively told me to look at the walls of the mountains and try to figure out spots of heavy darkness in the midst of the fields of light. I didn't want to look because the glare bothered my eyes. I said that what was happening to me was similar to staring into a sunny street through a window and then seeing the window frame as a dark silhouette everywhere else. Don Juan shook his head from side to side and began to chuckle. He let go of my arm, and we sat down again under the hanging cliff. I was jotting down my impressions of the surroundings when Don Juan, after a long silence, suddenly spoke in a dramatic tone. "I have brought you here to teach you one thing," he said, and paused. "You're going to learn not doing. We might as well talk about it, because there's no other way for you to proceed. I thought you might catch on to not doing without my having to say anything. I was wrong."
"I don't know what you're talking about, Don Juan."
"It doesn't matter," he said. "I'm going to tell you about something that is very simple, but very difficult to perform. I'm going to talk to you about not doing, in spite of the fact that there's no way to talk about it, because it is the body that does it." He stared at me in glances, and then said that I had to pay the utmost attention to what he was going to say. I closed my notebook, but to my amazement, he insisted that I should keep on writing. "Not doing is so difficult and so powerful that you shouldn't mention it," he went on. "Not until you have stopped the world. Only then can you talk about it freely, if that's what you'd want to do." Don Juan looked around and then pointed to a large rock. "That rock over there is a rock because of doing," he said. We looked at each other, and he smiled. I waited for an explanation, but he remained silent. Finally, I had to say that I hadn't understood what he meant. "That's doing," he exclaimed.
"Pardon me? That's also doing."
"What are you talking about, Don Juan?"
"Doing is what makes that rock a rock and that bush a bush.